I'm stressed, I'm depressed, I'm shittily dressed. I'm Terry, and this is Terrifying.
This is a story of a 10-year-old turned murderer. Her companionship with violence and death started nearly at birth. Join me in this terrifying tale of Mary Bell. She was born to a 16-year-old prostitute named Betty, who literally said, "Take that thing away from me," when she saw her daughter. In her early life, she was abused. Her mother would often go on business trips, and the young Mary was relieved in those moments because she didn't have to suffer abuse from her mother. Betty's sister, Mary's aunt, recalls a time when Mary's mother even tried to give her away to a lady who had unsuccessfully tried to adopt. Mary's aunt quickly got Mary back. Mary was also said to be accident-prone. Some instances include her falling out of a window and overdosing on sleeping pills. Was this her mother's way of trying to rid herself of this burden? Some think so, but others think it might be a case of Munchausen by proxy. Because Betty enjoyed the attention and sympathy she received due to Mary's accidents. According to later statements from Mary, her mother even began prostituting her out at the age of 4. Her family hasn't spoken on this. As I said earlier, Mary was no stranger to death either. She watched her friend get run over and killed by a bus. With all of this, it's no surprise that Mary became strange, withdrawn, and manipulative, and it always seemed that she was on the edge of violent outbursts. On May 11th, 1968, Mary was playing with a 3-year-old boy when he was badly injured after falling off an air raid shelter. His parents thought it was an accident. On May 12th, 1968, 3 months later, mothers went to police, telling them that Mary had choked their daughters, but no charges were filed. On May 25th, 1968, the day before Mary would turn 11, in an abandoned house in Scotswood, England, she strangled 4-year-old Martin Brown. He sadly passed away. Mary went and got her friend Norma Bell, who was not related to her, but before they got there, two local boys had stumbled upon the crime scene, and the police were notified. The police were mystified. They found nothing but a tiny bit of blood and saliva on the young boy's face. There was no signs of violence. Next to the body was a bottle of painkillers. They assumed he took those, and his death, at first, would be ruled an accident. Just days after Martin's death, Mary visited his home, asking to play with him. His mother gently explained that Martin had passed away, and Mary replied she knew that. She just wanted to see Martin in his coffin. The mother slammed the door in Mary's face. Shortly after this event, Mary and her friend Norma broke into a nursery school, vandalizing it with notes taking blame for Martin's death and promising to kill again. The nursery school installed an alarm system after the disturbing break-in, and they caught Norma and Betty at the scene of the crime several nights later, but since they were just loitering outside when police came, they were off the hook. Mary was also telling her classmates that she was the killer of Martin Brown. None of them believed her because she was known to be a show-off and a liar. None of them took her seriously until another boy would end up dead. On July 31st, 1968, just 2 months after the first killing, Mary and her friend Norma killed a 3-year-old named Brian Howe. But this time, Mary went farther. This is just a content warning. It's a little graphic, so be prepared. She strangled him and also mutilated the boy's body with a pair of scissors. She scratched his thighs and butchered his genitals. When Brian's sister started looking for him, Mary and Norma offered to help. They searched the neighborhood, and Mary even pointed out the concrete blocks that hid his body. Her friend Norma said he wouldn't be there, so they just moved on with their search. When Brian's body was found, the neighborhood was in a panic. Two boys within months of each other were found dead. They started asking the neighborhood children if they had seen anything. When Brian's body started to cool down, new marks started to appear on him. Someone had marked his torso with an M using a razor blade. The lack of force and his strangulation also led police to believe that his killer might have been a child. Mary and Norma did a poor job of hiding their interest in Brian's case. and that would be their downfall. Norma was excited, but Mary, she was evasive. They both acted strangely in their police interviews, and the police even pointed out that Mary was seen with Brian on the day of his death. On the day of Brian's funeral, Mary was found outside of his house laughing and rubbing her hands together. Probably in, like, mad scientist fashion, you know, when she saw his coffin. Police called her back in for a second interview. Assuming the police were closing in on them, she made up a story saying that an 8-year-old boy hit Brian on the day of his death, and she even said the boy was carrying scissors. That was a mistake. The mutilation of the body was kept away from the public and the press. It was a fact only known to 2 people, the police and Brian's killer. Both girls broke down with further questioning. Norma started cooperating, but Mary was trying to push the blame on her friend. Both girls were charged. The prosecutor told the court the reason for the murder was that solely for the pleasure and excitement of killing is why Bell committed the murders. The British press referred to Mary as evil-born. In December, the jury agreed that Mary Bell had committed the murders, and she was found guilty. They convicted her of manslaughter and even stated that she showed classic signs of psychopathy, and she couldn't be fully held accountable for her actions. Norma Bell was acquitted because she was considered to be under a bad influence. The judge concluded that Mary was a threat to other children and she was considered a dangerous person. She was imprisoned at Her Majesty's pleasure, a place where when the powers feel like it's appropriate, they release you. The powers were impressed with Mary's treatment and rehabilitation, so in 1980, Mary was released on license, which just means she was technically still serving her sentence, but she could do so while living in the community under probation. Mary was given a new identity and to protect her from tabloid attention, but somehow they always seemed to find her, forcing her to move constantly. In 1984, Mary had a daughter. She didn't know about her mother's crimes until she was 14 years old. When a tabloid tracked down her family, the family had to escape their home with bedsheets over them because a slew of reporters had started camping on their lawn. Today, Mary Bell is under protective custody at a secret address. Her identity and her daughter's identity are protected and both remain anonymous. Some believe she shouldn't be protected. June Richardson, the mother of Martin Brown, one of Bell's victims, told media, "It's all about her and how she has to be protected. As victims, we are not given the same rights as killers." She is still protected by British government, and sometimes now, when the courts protect the identities of some convicts, it's referred to unofficially as the Mary Bell Orders. Well, that was the case of a 10-year-old murderer, Mary Bell. Quite chilling, isn't it? I hope you enjoyed. I hope you keep listening. Stick around for more episodes, because this is going to be terrifying.